Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast from Westwood One. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What's up?
Norris Howard.
Yo.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Yo.
So just before we start off here, I just want to be able to tell everyone that we're going to make a minor change to the way that the Checkpoint Radio Podcast goes down. We're going to start
off. No, we don't like change.
Change is scary, I know, but we're all going to get to the other end of this. We're actually going to be starting off with our podcast topic and then moving on into our radio show review to wrap up the show.
We just want it noted that we are not doing this under any kind of pressure from Kevin.
That's right.
We are not granting any of his desires in this.
This was our idea. In fact, I don't think we even ran this through Kevin. We didn't ask Kevin.
Kevin may well be upset about this idea.
Yeah.
We can only hope.
First time Kevin even hears it.
So it's going to be a little bit different. And the thing is that we're going to actually be working towards taking some live calls on the podcast as well. So if you're only a podcast listener, if you've only ever downloaded the podcast from our website over at checkpointradio.com, then make sure you head on over to twitch.tv/checkpointradio and follow us there so that you can join us when we go live on Wednesdays to record this very show. And by this very show, I mean our radio show and then our podcast.
Yeah, also, if you only listen to the podcast, screw you. We work really hard on that radio show.
It is true. We do invite you to tune in to the radio show. You can find local air times and dates over at checkpointradio.com in our affiliate section. But before we get into our podcast topic, I do want to start off with an iTunes review. I'm very proud of these when they come in. And so I do like having them right at the beginning of the show. And this one coming into us from Jerry Elizondo, who says, I'm a longtime listener since the Final Fantasy XI show.
Ooh,
wow.
Awesome.
But lost track when I stopped playing. The hosts have grown and managing the media that they work on and become radio pros for the gaming community, not just podcasters for a single game. If you're into gaming in general and or esports, this is the show that you must listen to. Way to go, guys. Keep it up. Jerry Elizondo from Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Awesome.
Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate that.
That's right. Wow. You know, we have a lot of representation north of our own borders up in Canada, but not a ton down in Mexico. So we're glad that you found the show, Jerry. Make sure that you leave us an iTunes review. We're trying to get to 60 in the 365 days of our second year of podcasting, which, by the way, this is episode number 50 of the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Right?
Crazy.
We've done 50 episodes of the podcast.
In
That's kind of cool.
We will have done a year's worth of podcasts.
And that is somehow right. They haven't emailed us saying knock it off yet.
I know, right?
That's incredible.
So listen, head on over, find us, and give us a review over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever you want to call it. Appreciate hearing from all of you. We do value all of your reviews, and hopefully we'll have time to read much more of them on future episodes of the podcast. All right. Let's get into this podcast topic. This is weird because normally we go into the radio show review, but let's go into the podcast topic. We've got a lot to cover.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie?
Where do we even start? That's always my biggest problem when talking about this. Infinity War, by the
way,
if you're wondering.
Yes, let's. I think that would be the appropriate place to start is by bringing our listeners in on what we're talking about today.
So in less than a week, Avengers Infinity War is hitting theaters. This is 10 years of movies culminating in what is, according to the Russo brothers, going to be heartache, emotional turmoil. The first 10 minutes, they said, is literally going to rip your soul out of your body and reduce you to tears.
It freaking better had
it
well be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be pissed if it's not.
What do you think the opening scene is then?
Tony Nine.
Iron Man.
No.
Wow.
It's not
going to
be.
Out the gate?
No way it's going to be that
early.
It's going to be Loki.
It's going to be.
It's not going to tear me down and reduce me to tears.
That's not
going to
reduce me to tears.
It's going to be the Asgardians being wiped off the face of the planet. There's only a small ship of them left. We might even see Valkyrie die.
And the thing is that, you know, even in the last 20 minutes of Thor Ragnarok, we saw a lot of redemption being placed on Loki. And I think that he's supposed to be seen as somewhat a sympathetic character. Mm-hmm. In the end, he ends up doing the right thing.
Yeah.
I think we're in the first 10 minutes. The first casualty I think is going to be Loki, followed by the Asgardians.
Dude, that would be.
And Thor, we know Thor escapes.
Thor does escape.
We know
Thor and Banner escape.
A bit of an addendum to that, because I don't think Loki's going to be the first one. I think that we're going to see the heroes that were on the ship. So Thor, Loki, whatever Valkyrie. That blue guy's name, Valkyrie.
Valkyrie's in there. Yeah,
I think they're going to try and obviously stand up to either the Black Order or Thanos or whoever is boarding the ship. I think that Valkyrie will be the very first. First, instantly vaporized character.
Could be.
And I don't think it's until the Asgardians are wiped out and Loki realizes, oh shit, like he could have a moment of redemption, but we know he gives the Tesseract over. Yeah. And I think
that's gonna be nearly enough. Thanos hates him.
I think he's still gonna die. I think that Marvel's gonna deny Loki his redemption.
Deny him his redemption?
Yeah.
I think so too. I think if you do it that way, then you, if you're going to do it, you do it that way. Hmm. You do it like, here's somebody who ultimately may make a selfish choice.
Well, because
one of
the things that I think they were really trying to drive home in Thor Ragnarok is that over the movies, Thor has really changed, right?
Yeah.
Loki has not.
Yeah,
he's not grown.
And I think that it's really going to come down to the fact that they're showing you did not change your ways. You had every opportunity to, and in the end, you always look out for yourself. But this time, it's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
You're done.
Hmm. Brutal.
Because the amount of fangirls that are going to die if Loki dies like that with no redemption arc. Oh my gosh.
Nah.
Oh, I mean, Tumblr. Tumblr's going to
kill
light
Tony
up.
Yeah, let's kill Peter.
Let's be honest. There is a pretty sizable boner out there for Tom Hiddleston.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yes, it's not like you're going to need a whole lot of help for
Peter. He's a Taylor Swift ex. So I mean,
let's be honest. They've pulled the punch at killing him off two times already in the series.
They have.
So if there's going to be a character death that the audience is most primed for, it's going to be Loki.
Mm hmm.
I think it's got to be Loki.
Now remember, we're not saying that he's the only death. There's going to be tons of deaths. We're just saying who's going to be the first.
That's my only argument. It's like, you know, when I hear directors say stuff like this, pretty much only, I don't know.
They don't usually don't deliver.
Pretty much only Benioff and Weiss who've made Game of Thrones have pretty much delivered on, you're going to cry this season.
The brutality.
That's fair.
Yeah, this season is going to really get at you.
And I get it. That's an HBO show. It's already known for its, you know, for its violence. But at the same time, with something like this, I really do hope that if they say, you know, so much here is going to be emotional and things are going to happen, well, characters are going to die. Like, you better deliver on that.
Also keep in mind that they can't kill off too many, especially the important ones in Infinity War, when they've also said that Avengers 4 is where like the big heartbreak is going
to
be.
Yeah, some people do have to survive this one to make it to the next one.
Yeah.
Dang. I hope they don't kill T'Challa.
No.
Hang on.
Anything with that big of a money sign on it? Nuh-uh. He's safe. He earned his safety.
Definitely debate which characters are safe.
Yeah, let's go there later.
Moving into Infinity War here in a second. But, Robbie, you're right. This is the culmination of 10 years worth of a cinematic universe being built, and built successfully.
Has there ever been anything that compares to this in cinema?
In cinema? Almost certainly not.
Definitely not.
Yeah,
definitely
something that was built to through 10 years.
I was going
to
say, even
the only thing
close. Not like Harry Potter books, right, where they had seven books. Of course, it was a seven-part series. We knew that's where it was going. This is 10 years of different stories having to all build together.
The only thing close in any media besides books, because books hang on forever, is Metal Gear. It's the only thing I can think is anywhere close of a bunch of games peppered all across a timeline.
But look how many years it took to
eventually stitch together into one big narrative.
That's a game series that's been going since 1984.
Exactly.
It'd be like if this is literally as old as I am.
Yeah, anything close that I could compare.
This would be like if a movie came out that connected all of the different James Bond actors their individual mythos into one congruent
big
story, which there was a theory that was going to happen at some point.
007's a code name.
Yeah, I mean, James Bond's a code name. code name, not who you, not the person.
Yeah. Oh God, that would be like explaining the midichlorians. It would take all of the. I mean, there's
take
not,
all the magic out
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to answer that. You definitely don't need to answer that, especially with a franchise like James Bond. But I mean, you guys are absolutely 100% right. I can't name another media project in any medium, except for maybe books, that really tries to tie all of these disparate ends together.
That and does it well
and
as
in,
well.
But in that way, though, it does almost exactly mirror comic book arcs.
Sure does. Yeah.
Because that's what a lot of, I mean, that's, I think.
It's beautiful what Marvel have done here, though.
It's true.
It?
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's what I think drove the popularity of a lot of these books, and especially some of the weird one-offs that you would get, or some of the weird series that you would get, especially out of Marvel. This actually seeks to repeat that process on a bigger, more consumable mainstream scale. And the surprise out of that is that it's working.
Yeah, that it's good.
It's good.
Like, I would absolutely believe that, especially with a medium like comic books, you can do something like this. But here's the problem is usually when you go through, like, let's say, like, Infinite Crisis, you know, there was a bunch of different books that were all leading up to Infinite Crisis in DC, and some of them were good, but at least half of them still sucked.
Right.
Like, as is like the rule of almost any comic book, for every good one, there's a bad one.
Sure. I mean, but the averages of the Marvel movies are so high.
And that's what I mean. Like, yeah, Marvel has hit on every cylinder. Like, I can think of maybe two Marvel movies total that I didn't thoroughly enjoy.
And even the, quote, the bad ones are still pretty decent.
Thor 2 and Thor 1.
Really?
Maybe Iron Man 3.
Okay. For me, it's Iron Man 3 and Thor 2.
I liked Iron Man 2, and a lot of people didn't care for it. I liked it.
Yeah.
But Iron Man 3, I think, and maybe, as much as I loved Iron Man, and maybe Thor 2. That's
Iron Man 3 and Thor 2.
Most people's answer for this is the Incredible Hulk, and I actually really
I always forget to count that.
I liked the Ed Norton Hulk. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I wish that they had had
Ruffalo
in place for that, so that the continuity would make a little bit more sense.
Norton's Hulk really does suffer purely for how good Ruffalo's is.
Yeah. No. 100% right. I think Norton, for as great of an actor as he is, he took the role way too seriously.
I agree.
And there was almost no levity that you get in the other Marvel movies. And
that traditional levity that they're known for. Like, we've said many times that Marvel movies, like, sometimes can suffer from shtick.
Yeah.
And suffer from, like, the light.
Too much fun.
Ragnarok is, like, in my opinion, super guilty of that. But I
still loved it.
It's campy.
It's very campy.
But the thing is, and Joe, I want to kind of bring back to the point you and Nate were talking about in terms of comic book arcs. That was part of the reason why I think I wanted, like, the DC films to do so well, is because there are so many big events that they could have done, even if they didn't do, you know, Crisis, right?
Right.
Even if they just led up to say, we're going to redo Green Lantern, and eventually everything's going to lead up to Blackest Night. I'd have been yes!
Yeah, that would have been sweet.
I'd have been like, I am on board for this.
They can't wait 10 years.
Exactly.
They got to do it now.
They got to do it now.
Yeah, I think that's part of the DC,
paradigm.
DC really feels like the little brother to Marvel, especially in the movie department.
When we first saw the trailer for Justice League, everyone kind of had that same moment of like, no. Marvel earned Avengers.
Yep,
they earned
sure
it
did.
Three really good and one okay origin stories. And then, but
that's fair. You're 100% right. And again, you know, phase one was not my most favorite phase of the Marvel.
Phase two by far my favorite.
Phase two was really good. And I think that it's really peaked at phase three. I mean,
these movies are so good right now.
The pacing is perfect.
I don't know.
The pacing is perfect.
That is one of the things is that, you know, the way that they're able to figure out and pinpoint really which genre of movies a certain superhero kind of exists in.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that you see that most clearly with the Cap films.
You took the words out of my mouth.
The first Cap film was 100% a period piece.
Yep.
And all of the, and a really well done period piece, by the way.
Yeah.
The first two were pretty much period pieces.
Well, no, the second.
Not Winter Soldier.
Yeah, the Winter Soldier was way
political
more.
Political thriller.
Political
thriller. It was the Manchurian Mandalorian candidate.
But I, dude, I would have said it was shot like a Bourne flick because it really is. All of the action, all of the action beats were like straight out of a Bourne flick.
It was shot like a Bourne.
It was.
What Marvel realized that I think DC didn't is that the superhero movie isn't a genre. It's a theme.
It's a theme.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
But you talk about the cat films, and I just want to jump in. You talk about the cat films and how they stitch together. If you look at, as you said, you know, the best of the Marvel films, when you look at the first Avenger, or you Avengers, the first Avenger, Winter Soldier, to Civil War, to Black Panther, because that is, in my opinion, the most solid continuity out of all of them. You're talking about, in my opinion, three out of the best five, easy.
Yeah.
And that's probably my top three off rip being
that's fair.
Black Panther, Avenger, Black Panther, Winter Soldier, and then the first Avengers one.
Yeah. That's fair.
But I mean, you were talking about, you know, how for you, like, Ragnarok was kind of campy, and I think that speaks to Robbie's idea of superhero movies being a theme.
Yeah, that was easy. When you have your buddy duo,
right? When you have a big crossover event happening in comics, they have to find a way to take a more serious book like what Captain America was, and somehow it also has to work with a character like Squirrel Girl, who is goofy and silly. And I feel like that's what they're trying to recapture sometimes with their movies, where they say, okay, we've just had we've got Black Panther coming up, which is extraordinarily very serious. Grounded things that are happening in this world.
Yeah.
How do we balance that? And you balance that with a
Thor
very happy movie.
You know, you're right. You know, I think you're right. Because, Norris, I had a lot of the same criticisms about Ragnarok that you had, is that it felt like wall-to-wall shtick.
Yeah.
Like, even from the opening line of the movie, oh, I'm Thor, and I bet you wonder how I got here.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was like, all intentional.
It is very. Most jokes are intentional, but the thing is that it just felt like by the end of it, like I had been battered over the head with shtick the entire time. Now, on repeated viewings, I actually like Ragnarok quite a bit more.
I'm the same.
On repeated viewings,
I liked it way more my second time.
I watched it again the second time, and I did like it much more. But then
I mean, to be honest, the second or third time I was watching only for Jeff Goldblum, and that made it even better. I don't know why. I hated the character the first time around, maybe because I had a little bit of context for the Grandmaster in the first place, and I didn't think that Jeff Goldblum's version was the right fit, but for the story that they told within it, it was the right fit because they just let Goldblum be Goldblum, and that was brilliance on screen.
It really was. But talking about like camp and lightheartedness, and then like you contrast that with like the Guardians movies, for instance, which are lighthearted in tone, but like the first Guardians was brilliant, more brilliant than I think anybody knew it was ever going to be.
100%.
If you would have told me that Dave Bautista would be one of the most endearing, charismatic people
if you remember,
to put on screen.
Guardians was the first time that prior to it coming out, everyone was like, this is going to be the first flop. This is the biggest risk that they're taking because nobody knows who they are.
Yeah. I blasted them for casting Dave Bautista. I'm like, are you guys insane? The man can't act.
But the thing is,
we're going to give him a character who doesn't have to act.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Good call. Okay, never mind. It's brilliant.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy may have been, yes, obviously Marvel's most adventurous outing in terms of their cinematic universe, but one that really proved, listen, we have a formula that works regardless if people know
the characters or not.
Mm-hmm. And that makes something like Ant-Man way easier to do, which is, in my opinion, probably one of the best Marvel movies out there.
But it goes back to those same like comic book tropes, and because they're borrowing from that type of source material, they understand how to write for it in the same way that something like The Defenders works on Netflix.
Yes.
Because you don't shoot it like a big budget. They're the small local tier superheroes.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't make them into the Avengers. You do crime noir.
Yeah.
You do, you know what I'm saying?
Punisher is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Punisher does not need to be fighting global threats.
Right.
Punisher is perfect doing what the Punisher is supposed to do.
But let's talk a little bit about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the ABC show.
Oh, yes.
That exists within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because there is direct ties, there's direct nods, and in fact, some plot beats that have happened on S.H.I.E.L.D. before right. we actually even saw them in the movies. And what I think, you know, I Robbie, you've gotten me very invested in mm-hmm. S.H.I.E.L.D. And I enjoy watching the program quite a bit. But I think the true brilliance of the program has to do with the fact that you have all of these digital assets that are built for huge, impressive films like Captain America. You've got all of the Quinjet animation. You've got, you know, the Triskelion scene settings and stuff like that. It's very easy to go and repurpose just a lot of that footage in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show and have it look really pro.
Helicarriers as well. That big plot hole in Age of Ultron where the helicarrier randomly shows up at the end. There's nothing random about that. If you watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you'd be clued
into exactly why they were there.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I do think that's really cool. I'm not so much into Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, you should.
But I really like the concept of having these big, huge films that you have and having this other supplementary content
and
that fills in the gaps.
Simultaneously making it so that if you watch all of them, then great. You know, you get all the context
but
and stuff.
But if you don't.
But if you don't, you're not left out of anything.
You know, absolutely.
And it goes back to what I was trying to say about they earn what they do, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, when I screamed at them over casting Dave Bautista, and then I went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy, it became my favorite movie that they had put out so far. It was a huge bowl of shut the hell up, and I was like, all right. And then when they try to do Ant-Man, to your point,
yeah.
I can't then go, that's a stupid movie.
Yeah.
I have to go, I gotta see it first, and then see. And I guess what? I liked it again.
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, you've got Paul Rudd quipping the entire movie, and he's actually really funny and endearing as well. But and to that point, the amazing thing about Marvel movies is the amount of clout they've been able to to build within their own fan base.
Yeah.
You know, even if Black Panther wasn't the second or third most popular movie that Marvel has ever put out, I still think that the hype for Infinity War would have been at its peak just the way that they've been building this ongoing storyline for so long. I mean, you really have to hand it to Disney to make such strong choices in a lot of their movies. I could have never thought when I went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy that movie was going to open on a woman dying. Right? Like, incredible. Like, I was ready for shtick wall to wall. I was ready for Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
But I got this surprisingly touching emotional story that was kind of wrapped around shtick and very well crafted shtick. It is probably the finest example of Marvel and Disney's creativity and their partnership together. It really is amazing.
My theory actually is that they had the confidence to not be as involved. I think that they took when they acquired Marvel Comics, right? They created Marvel Studios, that they obviously put the guys who was in charge of the comics in charge of this.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons it's become so great. Whereas when you look at what's wrong with WB, I think WB has too much of their hands in what's going on.
WB also doesn't have as much money. Let's just be honest.
I mean, and it's not like ABC hasn't made calls that Marvel doesn't agree with.
Well, yeah,
they canceled Agent Carter.
Yeah,
and Marvel really wanted to pursue that, which means in my head they probably had some very strong tie-in plans for what happens in the movies, but they unfortunately weren't able to see that through because ABC
wanted
to see the returns.
It wasn't even the returns.
Was that what it was?
They wanted they wanted to capitalize on Hayley Atwell in her own new series.
Boo.
Yeah. And guess what? That didn't last.
The thing is, man, is I honestly don't even think it was that complicated. I think they went to Disney and they asked. They said, hey, who here came up reading Marvel comic books? And they found, like, the two executives. And they pulled them to the side. They found Joss Whedon. They said, hey, we're going to do Infinity War. And he went, Cut the check fucking now.
Yeah.
Right? Because here's the thing, and I tell people all the time that, you know, this is funny how we loop it into gaming. I talk to people who read the comics and then are immediately going to the films that, no, you don't understand. I've been invested in this particular story arc because Infinity War is what the Marvel versus games are based off of.
Mm-hmm.
They are based in the War of the Gems. The first Capcom Marvel fighting game is Marvel superheroes War to Gems.
I can't tell you the number of people who come into my work and they're like, oh my god, you know, Infinity War is coming soon, do you have the original book? Because everyone like, I, dude, I have sold tons of copies of anything Thanos.
Really?
Anything that was big in Infinity War.
Yeah.
There's a current running Thanos book which doesn't even make it to the shelf anymore.
What does the original run of Infinity Gauntlet's book pull?
I mean, they'll just buy the trade paperback for $20-$30.
Well, no, but I mean, if you wanted to really
the actual comics,
commit
though?
Yourself to the original run, original print, what would that run?
I just saw the other day someone had an Infinity Gauntlet number. It was an Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah, Infinity Gauntlet number one, and it's running like $80 right now.
That's it.
This one. Well, Joe, you can't see. I can't turn it. I'm messed
but,
up.
Yeah.
That seems low.
Yeah, I would have thought that that's way higher, because I know first appearances that go for way more than that.
I bet in about a year it's going
to
be a lot higher.
That's what I was about to say. You got to understand.
If it follows the trend of every other superhero book that's happened recently, it will be expensive. It'll grow more and more expensive for about 6 months after the movie launches, and then it'll drop off.
It'll taper off.
Right, guys, we need to get back to the Infinity War.
Yeah,
right. Infinity War.
But actually, to bring this back to Infinity War, you know, between choices that Marvel and Disney have made in their films, but just, you know, the amount of leeway that Disney is giving some of its sub-brands, and specifically I'm speaking of Rogue One in the Star Wars canon, I really do think that Disney is not going to be shy about who, you know, who dies and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
I think it was such a huge risk for them.
It was a huge risk.
And I mean, not just because
narratively,
yeah. Exactly. Not just because it was a Star Wars side story, but to essentially make, you know, Mass Effect 2 the movie, you know, where.
Yeah.
You have this the down note of the entire film. There is nothing uplifting about Rogue One whatsoever.
No. It's not meant to be, really.
And it's
either.
Not meant to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, even...
It's like the Schindler's List of Star Wars films.
I mean,
it's just not supposed to be a happy
even
movie.
The directorial choice to have that last scene of Darth Vader, it's absolutely just monstrous.
Yeah.
I mean, demonic.
Make so absolutely no mistake. That last sequence was the director saying, you have to let me do this.
Yeah.
This is in my contract. I'm not doing the movie otherwise.
And even as it is, Disney has to go, okay.
Yeah. But, and they did. And thank heaven they did, because I'll tell you what was a good movie became a great movie.
Yes.
That sequence.
That one sequence.
Because they have that Star Wars has never sufficiently explained the fear of Darth Vader until that moment.
Yeah, no. And a lot of things, a lot of pieces got connected in that moment, and the movie was exactly what it needed to be, what the creator wanted it to be, and Disney let them follow through with that vision. Whereas I think the more safe choice would be, well, keep Jyn Erso alive
so that we can
sell dolls and toys of her.
That would have been the 2000s.
Yeah.
Paradigm,
right.
of LucasArts / Disney, whatever.
So I do think that Disney is going to be giving Marvel a lot of leeway in the way that they portray and present the character deaths that we know are coming in Infinity War.
So with that said, who lives, who dies?
All right, yes. Now it's time to figure out.
I want
to
go first.
Who are the red shirts and who is safe?
If I could pick, like if I'm going to put a bet on someone dying, I'm putting it on the Hulk. Because since he didn't get a movie, what's been mentioned in multiple interviews is that instead of a movie, they wanted to give him a character arc through Age of Ultron, Thor Ragnarok, and Infinity War, right? Mm-hmm. And what they would have made his movie on is he's going to touch in each of those, right? And obviously it's centered around him and Romanoff. I think that in Infinity War, they come to some type of conclusions, whether it's admitting their feelings, blah, 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 whatever. Good, happy ending between them.
And they kill him.
But he's still the Hulk. So he's not just going to go, you know, live happily ever after and have kids.
Good point.
So I think, in the heat of some moment where maybe the Hulk or, you know, Banner is going to try and slow them down, blah, 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 whatever. Hulk goes head to head with Thanos and gets utterly demolished with Romanoff standing there being able to do absolutely nothing.
I could see that happening in the Wakanda sequence. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before he dies, do they establish She-Hulk or plant that seed?
They could. Because
She-Hulk was a very popular comic for about 10 years before these movies started happening.
I think they do have to at least plant a seed. They at least have to make an allusion.
How do they do that, though.
Here's the thing. Is that as long as you have Gamora living, you can't have two green female characters because everyone's
she's going to die too.
Anyone whose overall character arc or persona is inextricably tied to Thanos in some way, so Gamora, Nebula, Drax, I think they're all prime for dying as well.
Well, they have, and they're going to be far more motivated than other characters mm-hmm. to try to kill Thanos. Right.
Yeah.
So I think Gamora is going to be an early casualty. Nebula is still kind of, I mean, that's kind of a toss up because in the comic line, she's the one that actually steals the mm-hmm. gauntlet from Thanos when he's in a kind of fugue state.
Yeah.
Is able to restore herself into her original non-cybernetic being.
So I actually am going to say, Robbie, I'm going to agree with you on the Hulk. I'm also say Tony. And I think Gamora as well. I think they kill Cap in Avengers 4.
Really?
Tony or Cap has to survive till Avengers 4.
That's what one of them has to survive to Avengers 4, but I think they both do not make it out of this phase.
No, absolutely not. I think, we know that RDJ's
contract is up. We know that.
It's been up for a minute, though, but he's mm-hmm. been kind of renewing on a film-to-film basis. Yeah,
I think it's been up since Avengers 2.
Yeah. But he came back on to do Spider-Man Homecoming. I mean, you know,
he's in Civil War.
He seems like he's very willing to step back into the role.
Yeah.
Chris Evans has said publicly that he's done with the MCU. What's not clear is whether that's applying to Infinity War or if that's applicable to Avengers 4.
Right, which is part of the reason why I say he doesn't make it out, but I also think of the characters that they need to quote-unquote get out of the way to make room for whatever phase comes next, whatever arc comes next, those two are too large.
So we've now encompassed most all of the Phase 1 heroes except for Thor.
Does
Thor make it past Infinity War?
Honestly, I can see him going either way.
I think he does.
I think Thor survives both movies. I think he makes it all the way.
I think he is the only of the original Avengers.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that's a good guess is because he's been quoted as saying that he is done because he feels that Thor Ragnarok was like the pinnacle of Thor's character.
But he
had said if the right script comes along, he'd come back again.
No, but I think you bring him back because Thor, you know, starts out even with Tony Stark and all of his arrogance and the naivete of you know, Cap and all this stuff, and you see this growth out of them in a way, divergent growth, but growth nonetheless.
Yeah.
With Thor had his own growth separate from everyone else.
That's true. Most of his growth happened
outside of the Avengers.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I think upon his return, he sees this huge rift between the two of them, and he tries to take on this unifying role. And by both of them being out of the way, he then has to say, well, none of us old guys are left.
And if they're going to do any type of new Avengers or whoever the new guard is, you do need someone who represents the old guard.
There is a very real possibility here that we may see a decimation of most of our beloved superheroes and that the fourth Avengers flick is the new Avengers. That's another theory. That's a curve that they could throw in there.
That is a theory.
Yeah.
The only motherfucker who needs to be safe is T'Challa. If they kill T'Challa, I'm pissed.
I think, honestly,
they cannot kill T'Challa.
Anyone who has a potential franchise still on their belt,
yes.
Black Panther, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange.
We know Ant-Man's going to make
Ant-Man
it.
Ant-Man gets another
movie. We don't even know if Ant-Man is actually even a part of the Infinity War battle.
Yeah.
Because Ant-Man and the Wasp is supposed to be coming out months afterwards. And my kind of pet theory on this is that Ant-Man and the Wasp is going to take place in the same amount of time that Infinity War does.
Mm. Okay. All right,
concurrent stories.
Yes,
I know who I want to be the representation of the old guard. All right, so we know that while Hawkeye hasn't been put in a lot of the promotional stuff or the trailers, it's been said that he is in the movie and that he's off on his own sort of deep cover secret mission sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And something they've done really well in all the Avengers is to make sure that you know that Hawkeye is just a dude.
Yeah, he literally has no.
Hold on, because there's a specific line from Age of Ultron where his wife mentions, like, you're out there with like geniuses and gods and stuff. You're just a man. Yet Hawkeye's like, but they still need me. So I think what I'd like to see, because I don't think he can make it through with no loss, I'd like to see the loss of his family. That helps to fuel his change into Ronin, and he's the one who sort of represents the old guard.
That could be interesting.
Interesting.
That could be very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Joe, who dies? You haven't said anything.
Yeah, Joe, who dies? Who do you think is going to get the axe?
Spider-Man survives this movie and dies in 4.
You think?
I don't think he makes it out of everything.
I would prefer that.
We do know that there's got to be a second Marvel-helmed Spider-Man movie before the franchise falls back to Sony. And I actually really like this idea because that opens up for the possibility of introducing Miles Morales as a follow-up character to Peter Parker. And I like that. And I've said multiple times that I think based on the ensemble cast that they've set up in Spider-Man Homecoming, that is far more... a referential to the Miles Morales set of books.
I think also, if I have a dark horse pick for who dies, it would be Scarlet Witch.
See, now, I think both Vision and Scarlet Witch are safe.
I think so,
really?
Too.
I think they're both
Vision. Like
Vision, something will happen to him because they got to rip the Mind Stone
out
of his head.
Yep.
So maybe he reverts back to regular Jarvis.
But we know, though, that he lives through that because there are scenes of him without the stone.
Something that I pointed out to Nate after watching a YouTube video, I'm actually really glad that they took this route with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, not that he matters at this point, is that remember that they got their powers from being experimented on with the mind gem.
You're going right where I was going to go.
There is that scene in Civil War where Scarlet Witch, you know, blah blah blah, does stuff to Vision. He like kind of he phases through the floor. That's not just her using her powers on him, because when she does it, you see the Mind Stone itself
actually
turns red, like her
so
powers.
Like she
are.
Has some.
She
control.
Has some type of link. To the Infinity Stones.
Right. Because they got their powers from the Infinity Stones.
I agree.
Now, the other thing that I've actually been seeing a lot of is articles saying that the way that they have it, that Marvel has it structured, and this was part of the brilliance of bringing in Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver the way that they did, is that they've now opened themselves up for when the Fox deal, the Fox merger, goes through a House of M storyline.
That's where I was going.
Yeah. I think that we could end up seeing a House of M storyline that ends up rectifying a lot of the canon that we saw get so mishandled by the X-Men
franchise.
That would
be the perfect X-Men reset.
It really would.
And here's the thing.
It really, really would.
And here's the thing, though. I wonder how, you know, after, you know, Infinity War, after Avengers, how they would do that. Because when I think of a House of M movie, I think a lot about Logan and how much that could basically be.
They've got to find a new Logan.
No, of course.
They've
but
got
that
to find
would
a new
be
Logan.
A perfect type of post House of M.
And somewhere to reboot and insert a new Wolverine into the mix.
I mean, they already burned their Apocalypse time
Jesus
fuckery
Christ.
That they could have done with Age
and
of Apocalypse.
Screwed with literally my third favorite X-Men arc.
Dude, Fox burned everything X-Men.
They really did.
Oh my God.
They really, really
but
did.
But anyway.
No shocker, by the way, that the X-Men movie that was in development over at Fox is back in for reshoots. Not a surprise there. Okay, before we move on, though, from Infinity War, who do you guys think is definitely safe moving into Infinity War? I think Black Panther is safe.
T'Challa's safe.
We got to see a Black Panther, too.
Let's go with non-safe bets, because certain ones are absolutely 100% safe.
Shuri's
right?
safe, because she's got to be
Shuri's
the next Iron Man.
Yeah. Okay.
See, if they kill off Shuri, that's the one I would be most pissed about, because there's so much potential with her.
VanKid81 asking in the chat if we think that we'll ever see Ironheart, Riri Williams. And I like the idea
that Shuri.
Yeah, that Shuri is going to be
she's
Riri.
Definitely set up for it. All right, I think that out of all the Guardians, I think that that Star-Lord will still be safe.
Yeah.
And Rocket, because James Gunn has specifically said that in the third one, he would like to explore more of Rocket's history and background and origin.
See, now, I actually think that there's a real potential after you do the Infinity War storyline that, you know, because a lot of the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be decimated, that you could actually take those characters, and I think Thor and Star-Lord Star-Lord are pretty good candidates for this, and start doing an Infinity Watch storyline.
Mm-hmm. I do. I said many times that Infinity War is the start of your entry into cosmic Marvel,
and they've pretty much said that.
Yeah, because we know Adam Warlock has to be in the mix.
He's coming in Guardians 3. James Gunn but confirmed.
Yeah, we gotta have Adam Warlock in the mix, so we know that that's coming.
Nova's gonna be coming
at some point,
especially with Xandar being decimated.
I just want a good Silver Surfer movie.
I agree.
2019 and beyond.
And
you'll
get it. Here's the thing: is that as we move into the next phase of Marvel movies, I do think that we're going to start seeing plans for Fantastic Four, for X-Men, for weaving them into the MCU.
Because even if they say, you know what, we've done, quote unquote, our Avenger stuff. We're done with that. I think, what you could do is you could then build the next arc around the Fantastic Four.
Well,
and
the
Cosmic
Russo
films.
Brothers straight up said they want to do Secret War.
You can't do that without Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what he said. He said with the Fox deal going through, he's like, if they let us, or I think the question was, if you could do some other arc or something, what would you pick? And they were straight up like
Secret Wars Secret is the Wars. Next arc.
Period.
Infinity War.
Right. And I mean, after Thanos, you do need somewhere to go. And more importantly, you need to actually scale it back. You know, like, it can't
just scale it back down. Yeah,
another deity, effectively.
Right. Which they've also said that going forward from this, that they want to start focusing on smaller, personalized stories.
And Doctor Doom is perfect.
Doctor Doom
is perfect.
Wouldn't that be a great intro into the Fantastic Four? Is don't start with the Fantastic Four. Start with Doctor Doom, and have
him be a villain for the new Avengers.
Ooh, I like
that.
That'd
be great.
I like that.
That would be like, that's like, they're kind of like their first big villain as a team is Doctor Doom.
And who's a bigger bad than Thanos? Galactus
is about it.
Galactus.
That's the completion of Phase 6.
Yeah.
Of the second major arc.
Galactus.
I mean, I think
that the next 10 years of movies build towards Galactus. Doctor Doom is the first major villain.
Oh, man, and you start, and then you introduce the Fantastic Four, and then you got to introduce the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Yep, Silver Surfer gets his own trilogy of movies leading towards Galactus.
Could you do a trilogy of movies for the Silver Surfer?
I wouldn't. Just do one.
You probably only need one.
Just do an origin story.
See, I think that you should do all of that through the cosmic scene, too, because we know that's where their next big focus is going to be, is expanding the cosmic scene, which, again, obviously would be better for Galactus than I think Secret Wars would be.
Yeah.
Secret Wars is something that can take place or start again on Earth following most of the Earth-based heroes.
And again, what's your best, foot in the door to that? It's at the conclusion of Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think taking the remnants of the Guardians of the Galaxy and kind of repurposing them.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I really hope it goes to Infinity Watch.
I can't wait for next week.
It'll be fun.
9 days to go.
All right.
We could all be completely wrong and off
probably.
Base.
I know, right? When this comes out on Saturday, we will be officially less than a week to go.
Mm.
Yes.
Man,
I am so excited.
Dude, I'm just pissed I can't see it day one.
Me too, dude. Yeah. I wasn't able to get day one tickets.
Yeah, I'm going on the Saturday.
I'm going Thursday night and again Friday.
I'm going Sunday.
Oh, man. It's going to be so hard to hang out with you guys.
No, straight up. There is a moratorium.
Oh no!
On
there's
the
radio
on all
silence
chats.
On all
oh,
chat. Yeah.
There's
all radio
chats.
Silence.
Do we just take off Sunday for other podcasts so we can go see it again?
No,
no,
we can't do that. All right, before we get out of here, let's tell you what we were talking about this week the Checkpoint Radio Show, which, by the way, you can find over at mixcloud.com/checkpointradio as well as checkpointradio.com. We post on-demand episodes every Tuesday, so about a week after they're recorded, they hit our website. So if you want to know what we were talking about this week, we start off talking about the partnership that Nielsen has brokered with Activision Blizzard, and I think that this is a really big deal.
And honestly, what I'm hoping it'll do too, because Norris, you touched on this a little bit during the show when we had mentioned that how, you know, when something like this happens going forward, potential investors will be able to look at specific esports and know what kind of returns they're getting, instead of just being like the entire industry made this much last year. So then hopefully abominations like For Honor tournaments won't happen, because people will be like, nobody watches your stuff.
No, and I agree, and I think that's the biggest problem with the esports quote unquote industry right now because it's so fragmented right now. And you know, you have your NALCSs and OWLs where there's a lot of convergence and people really want to get behind it. But you know, I really do think that outside of the FGC and DreamHack, really, that whole concept of just play everything. Well, you know, it just doesn't. Yeah,
it's
work.
It's too scattershot.
It's too scattershot.
This could also be a blessing for the FGC because hopefully somebody will see like there's all these eyes and these views in the FGC. But why are their prize pots so small? If you up the investment in it, you could get so many more eyes and
that,
hype on.
Because
this.
I think like the biggest sponsor of the Capcom Pro Tour right now might be HyperX or something like that.
That's it?
Yeah, like I can't think of any non-endemics. Who aren't
Red Bull does FGC stuff
and
too,
oh Red Bull okay, HyperX yeah. and Red Bull, but yeah. Red Bull is to this point I consider them endemic. They've been involved
That's
in
fair.
Esports really since it's nascent. But I really do think that when people begin to see like, wait a minute, Evo is pulling down, you know, 200,000 views on all these different platforms. Yeah, we really need to rethink how we're doing this. And if we up those prize pools and we create, you know, more drama because of that, you get more eyeballs on it.
I honestly do think that the FGC needs to look at the way that it's presenting its stars and its pros. I you know, maybe taking a couple of cues from UFC or WWE.
Without a doubt.
Might actually lend a bit of some real fervor to wanting to watch FGC, and that may help bring in some of those bigger brands as sponsors.
But that's also the problem, is that when you say the FGC needs to look at, the FGC is not an entity.
No,
it is a term that we use
that is
to
true.
Describe
it encompasses
fighting games.
Many entities.
Yeah, there's
with
no
many
overall,
different interests.
There's yeah, you can't go to FGC headquarters and have them and give
but
them.
But I
a
mean, even
to.
If you start with like Capcom, right? You
yeah.
know, you start with
That'd
Capcom.
Be a good point.
Maybe you reach out to Arc Systems because Dragon Ball is so hot right now. You know, you reach out to those two, you know, even if you don't do anything else, you reach out to those two, especially Capcom, because they have their own apparatus already built in. You don't have to do anything but slap your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be really powerful, even because the paradigm, the foundation has not been made for the FGC yet. That's part of the problem with the OW and the NALCS. They're building off, you know, stuff like CSGO. They're building off, you know, Worlds and the international and stuff like that. There's years and years and years in StarCraft, years of how to do this properly.
Yeah.
And the FGC has had just Evo pretty much until Capcom Pro Tour.
Right. Well, and there's definitely some organizational hurdles that would have to be overcome. But I think that when you ask why prize pools are so low in something like the FGC, that may be a pretty compelling reason why. You know, if your entire community is kind of disparate in terms of, you know, how the tournament structure is going to be done, or how the, you know, execution of things, you know, might be different between two different types of games. Like it can be hard to really get a sponsor that understands what you're trying to do.
Well, also keep in mind too, you know, specifically saying it that way, when you have, Counter-Strike tournament that has, you know, $50,000 or $500,000 on the line. When you have an FGC tournament, you have multiple games being played. If you were to add up all of their prize pools, what would that come out to?
Okay, yeah, that may
about
actually
$500,000.
Yeah, exactly. So the investment's actually similar. It's just broken up over many more games.
Well, and that is part of the problem that the FGC has. I really do think that at some of the big events, you know, like Evo, there kind of is too many games being played.
What we actually need then is you determine the winners of each different game.
Right.
And then put them all into Thunderdome, and the last one standing comes out with the prize.
There you go. You just insert them all into a Battle Royale style game.
But I actually do think for something like Capcom.
No, not a game.
No, not a game. They actually fight it out.
No, I saw where you were. Yeah, they're fighting to the death then.
Yeah. But for Capcom Pro Tour, that's something that is self-contained and has its own rule set and has its own thing. You could totally do it for Capcom Pro Tour and have, you know, I think minimal organizational issues and make that $500,000.
Fair enough. You know, one of the things that one of the questions that I asked when I originally saw this deal being brokered is, you know, what's really the advantage of doing that to Blizzard, since no other esports organizations are being judged on the same metric as a Nielsen, right?
Yep.
Unless you have other esports leagues that are also using Nielsen, how do you know how you stack up against them? And it wasn't until I realized they want to see how they stack up against the NFL and the NBA and the MLB.
Quote unquote real sports.
Right.
Yeah, no, they want to be able to pitch to non-endemic sponsors and say, look, and we can compete with the NHL. You guys sponsor the NHL, and we have better numbers than they do.
The NALCS brought to you by Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, please.
We also talk about the latest in esports news, as well as Riot announcing an esports music festival going down in Singapore.
Please.
I'm just really sad that it's going down in Singapore.
Yeah, I mean, I get why.
Because I would have gone.
Singapore is awesome, by the way.
There's nothing wrong with Singapore, but I would have gone. I would have gone in a heartbeat.
Singapore is really nice.
I'm not going to Singapore to go.
No, not to this.
No, that's a big trip for almost any occasion. Yeah. I'm not sure what occasion would actually bring me to Singapore.
I mean, but though, like, you know what I'm saying? If we had some of that non-endemic sponsor money, maybe we might could make a trip to Singapore.
Yeah, you might be able to see us out there.
Checkpoint
not
Radio
yet.
At Singapore Music Festival, brought to you by Pepsi.
Right.
Y'all can send me, man. I love that place, man.
But, I mean, I do think that it's interesting that there are organizations out there that are looking to do this outside of just Riot and MTV's partnership, that this is actually something that's, you know, other people have identified, like, look, there's a close link here. And when you look back at, you know, because we've compared esports and, you know, things like the X Games before, there was a certain type of music that was endemically attached to the X Games, that, you know, the pop punks and the, you know, kind of the emo rock and you know, bad new metal, well, you know, like, I mean, all of those were kind of, you know, linked to
hieroglyphics,
skateboarding and snowboarding and all of that shit.
This isn't particularly strange for Riot either. I mean, they have a in-house metal band named Plentakill.
Do they really?
That does video game music for around League of Legends lore.
Now, really cool. is that a composer for the game that also has a side project band sort of thing?
Or a band employed by Riot?
Yeah. They are a band employed by Riot called Plentakill.
Okay, I was going to say, Blizzard has something similar. I don't know the full backstory behind them, but they have the Elite Tauren Chieftains, who have done all types of like original music.
Well, and then you got FF, and they have the Black Mages and Star Onions and stuff like that. But those are producers in the music. Musicians
exactly
from those games who have, you know,
yeah,
who just
no,
do
this
musical
is like,
side projects.
They do. They've released a couple of CDs now, and like they have like their skins in the game for like the Plentakill characters.
So it's like Falcon Shield, but they're officially employed by Riot.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much.
Pretty cool.
That's kind of fucking amazing.
That's kind of like, we, you know what? I know we just talked about the FGC, but could you imagine an FGC like rap festival, because those two are inextricably linked.
Oh, totally.
Hip hop and the FGC. I just think that would be a great
idea.
Dude,
I mean, you know, because I'm surfing SoundCloud all the time for music to be able to use on this show, and I, you know, I'll search, you know, Fortnite, right? Do you know how many Fortnite raps are out there?
Probably a lot.
There is a lot.
It's a big number.
There's a lot.
And you're on SoundCloud too, so most of
it's
not good.
Drake may be joining them soon if Fortnite puts in a dance from his hotline.
The hotline bling.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. But I mean,
pop culture convergence, man. The thing is, though,
without knowing it, Drake would be participating in this huge subsection and subculture, I guess is a good word for it, that exists on the internet of people who make songs specifically about video games that they love.
Yeah.
Your Mega Rans of the world.
Yeah.
Your
the Megas.
Absolutely.
Any of the OC remixes and stuff like that.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. What was that one band that used to do metal version? Power Glove.
Power Glove. Yeah.
It would be just kind of an extension of that kind of stuff. And without knowing it, Drake would be stepping right into the middle of it. And who knows? He might actually be able to find that is way more marketable than he thought.
That's a good point.
We also talk about the Dream Team, which is a website seeking to connect esports pros and esports teams. interesting conversation, an interesting concept for a website there.
I think what surprised me most is that where they decided they were going to expand into next, considering how much of a stranglehold Riot has on their on League of Legends.
Totally, dude.
Is that they chose League of Legends.
Yeah. As a huge League fan, it's about the last game I would have picked. If I was like seriously looking at something to move into, it would have been Rocket League.
I mean, I don't see, but honestly, I don't see them making as big of an impact in League because
that's what I mean.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to do this with the LCS leagues, are they?
Oh God, I can't imagine. You have to buy a franchise slot.
That's what I'm saying. Slots. They have totally separate contracts.
Maybe none of those franchises are going to be sourcing any of their acquisitions through a
not
website.
And no. Europe's moves the franchise as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it was so weird because even if you were to do like Overwatch, I don't think they'd be able to just randomly get into contenders.
League of Legends does have that city tournament thing that they do. So maybe this is what would maybe pull for. That's what I meant when I asked on the show, you know, who's the market for this?
Yeah.
Because
they want to expand into PUBG and
PUBG
would
have been good. Rocket League would have been a big one.
If they took this apparatus and said, you know what, you know, upon the release, you know, upon the inaugural season of you know, PUBG League or whatever, they would have came out with this and, you know, start talking about we can source talent.
I don't know
that. I don't know. How would that work?
I don't see it working at the same time as, you know, some sort of regional system, especially when you're talking about non-endemic sports organizations that are involved. We also talk about the roadmap for the future of PUBG.
Speaking of PUBG.
Yeah.
We do love PUBG, and we will talk about it any chance you give us.
Pretty much.
But I mean, listen, esports is going to happen, guys. Hashtag esports. Hold on to your butts.
PUBG's esports ready.
PUBG esports ready. It's on the way.
Something that I wanted to say in the segment when we were kind of talking a little bit about Fortnite, too, is the one thing that I think I respect about Epic and Fortnite is that they recognize, like, what we have here is like this sort of phenomenon where people are just playing it and streaming it. They're not trying to make it a competitive esports.
Listen.
Because that would be such a mess.
I don't like Fortnite, but I like it way more having just gone out and played. Like, I respect what it is. Like, okay, they are very, very self-aware of what they are.
Yeah.
Just like you, like, I think it's dumb, but you drop in on a party bus on a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
You can get in there and just start dancing. You're like, all right, they kind of get it. They know what they are.
Comparing PUBG and Fortnite is a little bit like comparing Skype and Discord, because one is just going to throw all the gamer slang at you. And it really, like, and this is going to sound like a slam, and it kind of is, but Fortnite is very much a poochyized version of PUBG.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's part of why I
look at our backwards hats in the cool way that we speak, guys. We're so awesome and edgy.
Yeah, it's why I can't play.
Whatever. We also talk about the latest in gaming news, and speaking of a Battle Royale game, talking a little bit about the drama surrounding Radical Heights.
Cliffy, stop.
Listen, if you play Fortnite, I don't see a compelling reason to ever even really try Radical Heights, because the two games are actually so close visually that I can't see someone being activated by one and
not the other.
Yeah.
I mean, the game aside, though, I was just really disappointed from Cliffy B's comments, because even if they may be true, the whole point is that, dude, understand the context of your statements.
Yeah.
We saw what happened to the last game. We saw what happened to Lawbreakers. It didn't do well at all.
If it had done even a little bit better, I think he would have had a little bit more ground to stand on.
But right now, it just kind of looks like, dude.
Well, that's the thing. It looks like sour grapes. Even if it's true, even let's say Epic is directly finding the key people at Boss Key and poaching them, it's not a good look.
No, not at all.
It's not a good look.
But especially when those people who are supposedly poached are actively out on social media
defending
defending their decisions. Yeah. So, you know. We actually make a list this week instead of tearing one down.
We'll be back to tearing them down next week.
That was really fun.
It was actually, that was one of, I think, my favorite segment this week on the show was making the list. And they're all universal categories, too, by the way, like your time waster game, your old standby. why. And the thing is that we want to know what your answers to each one of these categories is. Make sure you check out the you know, this week's episode, whether on your local affiliate station or whether on demand over at checkpointradio.com. But we want to hear from you. We want to know what your standby, what your time waster, what your old faithful game is.
And your show-off game.
Your show-off game. Let us know. Check PT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We also have an OWL update, kind of a mini version of Low Team Damage this week, as you guys were talking all about what's going on in Stage 3 and what we could be seeing in the future of OWL as well.
Yep, 100%. And guys, so if you want to go back and listen to any more of our Overwatch show, or you want to listen to Overwatch shows in the future, that's Low Team Damage. You could catch that every other Tuesday around 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Eastern.
I also think I want to start a new game where we see how many Dallas fans we can piss off.
I got a good record going.
You do. I have a lot to catch up. You actually got a straight up screw you Norris on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm I like this game.
It's good when you can get someone, like, not even to like make a huge argument, just say screw you.
Yeah.
And call you out by name.
Yeah.
You're like,
you know,
I did good.
Yeah, you know, you got under someone's skin pretty good.
It
there.
It felt good.
And of course, we wrap up this week talking, as we normally do, about our social media question, asking if you could take two games, two franchises, and mash them up Marvel versus Capcom style, which two franchises would you pick? And I was just shocked that Puppet Fighter got play in the room.
Puppet Fighter was awesome.
I'm looking forward to Puppet Fighter.
I would play Puppet Fighter right now.
It's like Play Fighter, but better.
I feel like Puppet Fighter would fall sort of in the same realm, kind of indie-ish, kind of like where I think Skullgirls popped up, because that is a pretty strong following, right?
You know what? That's
Puppet
fair.
Puppet Fighter.
That's 100% fair.
Yo!
That'd be lit. I'd be into that.
Man.
I would be super into that.
I would be really into that. Yep. As a matter of fact, that's actually one of my time waster games, is I have Skullgirls on my phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Let's get a hold of the developers. We got an idea for them.
Yeah, they could do it too.
Van Kid really says Pokemon and Digimon. I mean, that's pretty
That's a 90s classic.
It's kind of an obvious
one. I feel like anyone who puts together just two franchises that are usually considered rivals, I kind of... it's an easy go-to. It's kind of a lame.
It's kind of a cop-out.
Yeah, sorry, man. Sorry, Van.
Sorry, Van Kid. That's what we got going on this week on the radio show. Again, you can listen to full episodes on demand over at our website when they're posted every Tuesday. It's in our listen section, or you could just follow us at mixcloud.com/checkpointradio. Take all of those episodes with you on the go. Listen to them in the car, while you're driving to work, while you're driving back from work, or
at work,
wherever you're going. Are you going to drop off a body in a field?
Listen to it.
Listen to us on Mixcloud.
And as you're doing it, leave us an iTunes review.
I mean, that'd be hard to do both all of those
afterwards.
Things at once.
You're going to want to sit down and rest after burying that body, right? Take a breather. iTunes review.
Man, there we live by the river. We don't bury nothing.
All right. That's going to be it for Checkpoint Radio. Thanks so much for checking out the Checkpoint Podcast. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesday, interviews from past episodes, and much, much more. That's all over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram. Almost forgot about that. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Cram, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointradio.com.